Okay. Gary, we're going to show the film on the plastics, and then we'll go right to your report. All right. Let's have agenda item 5.
Okay.
Which was from yesterday.
Right. And this is actually a follow-up to a couple things, one of which is the board discussion that we've had on trying to focus on a little more holistically on some of the bigger water quality issues in the region. What can we do with those that might be outside of the boundaries of our specific programs? It's also consistent with the off-site meeting discussion we had in terms of what improvements can we make that are a little bit outside of the normal box of the items that you see before you in the agenda. And additionally, it's definitely a good kind of lead-in to one of our major topics of discussion today on stormwater, because of the transport of stormwater, of trash, including a lot of plastics, to our streams, drainage ways, and eventually, in the case of our region, pretty much straight to the ocean. And I thought this would be worthwhile looking at. It's not just a public service announcement kind of a video on keeping your plastic out of the gutter, but to me it was eye-opening in terms of going beyond the aesthetic problems of plastic, which is kind of what I always thought about. So I'm admitting I was naive on that. And it talks about food chain problems and some issues that are much more important than, I mean, aesthetics are important, but some other things that are really important. So that's my intro. See if this works.
Can we kill the lights?
Yeah, sure.
If anybody can't see you, you're welcome to move up and get closer.
I think this is about 20 minutes.
In the open ocean, graceful dolphins glide beneath the surface in pursuit of fish, their primary food. These fish, in turn, feed on minute, prolific creatures called zooplankton. These days, zooplankton share the surface waters with increasing numbers of minute plastic particles, posing a problem since fish and birds are now consuming plastic in addition to plankton. Since petroleum-based plastics are non-biodegradable, any plastic entering the ocean remains there, continually breaking into ever smaller pieces until it becomes ingested or is deposited on some distant shore.
As captain of the oceanographic research vessel Algita, I've traveled to many remote areas of the Pacific Ocean. And in my travels, I've been alarmed at the increase in the amount of trash, plastic debris on all the beaches that I visit. My sentiment was that the ocean is filling up with trash. To try to get a handle on the quantity of trash in the ocean, we devised a series of experiments using manta trawl and our technique of pairing the mass of zooplankton to the mass of plastic fragments. We trawled over 100 kilometers at random lengths and then came back to the lab and analyzed our samples. We compared the weight of the plastic pieces that we accumulated in these trawls to the weight of the zooplankton that we accumulated. And most people find it highly distressing to learn that for every 6 pounds of plastic that we got, there was only 1 pound of plankton. In other words, there's 6 times more plastic by weight in this area than there is naturally occurring plankton. However, the Central Pacific, being a gyre, does accumulate. The high concentrations we found are likely to be at their greatest in the center of the Central Pacific gyre. In our study, we counted over 27,000 pieces of plastic, and out of that 27,000, only 83 were tan. Now, we know from the large pieces of debris that we collected that there's plenty of tan objects that are breaking down to form plastic fragments, but we believe that the tan pieces are being selectively removed by birds and other plankton feeders because they resemble the krill. So color is important as a food mimic, also shape. The nurdles themselves have an oval shape that resembles fish eggs and are preferentially eaten by many species of birds. Over 70 species of birds have been found to ingest these pre-consumer plastics. Studies have been done on birds that have found higher PCB content in their tissues when they've ingested plastic. So we know this plastic is a way to transport pollution. The Laysan albatross and the black-footed albatross ingest post-consumer plastic. And the Laysan albatross ingests gliders and light sticks and large plastic fragments.
One of the problems you have as far as when the adult brings the plastic and regurgitates it into the chick, if the chick is not receiving enough nutrients, enough food, and this plastic is basically filling the void in the stomach, essentially it could die. What you see in here is basically it's a bottle cap. Some might have been a shampoo bottle or something of that nature. Another bottle cap. This looks like an electric wire plug.
Some Japanese scientists have just released a study indicating that plastic pellets, the manufactured way that plastics are shipped to end-use manufacturers, these plastic pellets are accumulators of hydrophobic pollutants, things like DDE, PCB. These can be up to 1 million times more concentrated on the surface of these plastic pellets than they are in the ambient seawater, based on this latest research. So we're looking at a situation in which it's not innocent confetti that's being spilled out in the ocean. It's a very effective biotoxin accumulator that's drifting around out there. According to Dr. Anthony Andrade, an expert in the breakdown of plastics in the marine environment, every piece of plastic ever manufactured still exists. The molecular weight of a molecule, a single molecule of plastic, these long-chain polymers are so heavy and so rigid that there's no organism, no bioengineered bacteria, nothing that can break them down. That's why there's no such thing as biodegradation of petroleum-based plastic. So what we've got to do is change the way we produce and consume plastic and hope that the system will clean itself up in hundreds of years. The Central Pacific Gyre's gentle maelstrom accumulates debris from all over the Pacific and concentrates it in two enormous eddy systems east and west of the International Dateline. In order to quantify the debris accumulated by this system, we sampled during transects of the eastern eddy on 4 separate voyages. Salps are chordate jellies at the base of marine food webs, which are eaten by over 50 species of fish, and are said to filter half the water column they inhabit each day. Here, we see living salps which have indiscriminately ingested plastic fragments.
What happens when a baby sea turtle ingests pre-production plastic pellets, sometimes called nurdles. They also ingest plastic fragments about the size of nurdles that get lodged in their throats. A study was done on turtles in the Sargasso Sea, and all the ones that were found floating dead had pieces of plastic lodged in their throats. So we're going to demonstrate how that could happen with the live young baby sea turtle. These little guys go around and eat this because it looks like something that would be natural food for them. And the pellets get lodged right here in this tender part of their throat. And that's where they fail to be able to eat after that, and then they die of starvation. Sometimes they do get past the throat into the stomach, but then it blocks their intestines. So what we don't want to see is turtles eating nurdles. No good. Don't eat. The highlight of our voyage to French Frigate Shoals was the arrival at the small Turn Island Airport of Dr. Curtis Ebbesmeyer and James Ingram, Jr. Kurt is a physical oceanographer who started the Beachcombers and Oceanographers International Association, and Jim is an expert modeler of Pacific Ocean currents working with NOAA. After they arrived at the island, they began to tour the beaches looking for what they could find in terms of beach debris swept up by the North Pacific Gyre. But they were eventually drawn to the small warehouse.
These are things which we really can't tell the origin of.
When we were in the warehouse down by the runway, we counted 80 some odd drift net floats. What the United Nations did was they outlawed drift nets. And these nets are something like 40 miles long, and they'll capture all large animals down to maybe 100 feet. And then the United Nations banned them in 1992. A drift net that's 40 miles long will have those little banana-length floats, 50,000 of them, to hold up that net. And when the net got away and the drift net broke up, the floats keep washing up. Well, 1992, theoretically, they were all gone. So why are we getting drift net floats now? There is some suspicion that there's illegal drift net fishing going on, but it also shows that the ocean keeps recycling and recycling. It takes like 6 years to go around the North Pacific Ocean. So you have drift net floats from well before 1992 still washing up. That's been 10 years ago. Some of those drift net floats that have been washing up have been floating around for 20 years. And it shows you how long debris lasts in the ocean. It just, if you turn off the plastic switch by magic, you'd have plastic washing up for the next probably 30, 40 years.
When two counter-rotating ocean currents come together, they leave a line of debris on the surface called the Langmuir windrow. For eons, these windrows have been sought out as ideal foraging sites for sea creatures and birds like this black-footed albatross.
fishing line that is so degraded that it's just turning into powder. It's just breaking apart as I rub it. And it's important to mention that these are still plastic particles, that they're not now going to be eaten by something and biodegraded. They still remain plastic. So the stuff doesn't go away. It just breaks into finer and finer particles until it becomes dust, like the dust you can see here on my fingers. Today aboard the oceanographic research vessel Algita, we're sampling after one of the largest storm events in the last 2 years. The amount of rain has created a huge plume out from the mouth of the San Gabriel River, and we're attempting to see the effects of this plume of runoff and the amount of debris that's contained within it.
Pretty much plastic in this one, too. And a lot of plastic fragments. Small plastic fragments. These are the things that compete with the plankton as a food source.
Just prior to the first winter storm, we sampled the sand in Seal Beach near the San Gabriel River for plastic debris.
Tail light. There's a lid of some kind. There's a wrapper of some sort. Styrofoam here. What really impresses me about this are two things. One, that it's not very oxidized. It's very fresh, clean plastic. Number two, that it's a kaleidoscope of bright colors, a lot of red. This is in contrast to the debris we find on the beaches of Hawaii, which is heavily oxidized and lacks the bright colors. It's mostly blues, greens, whites, blacks, and clears.
After the storm, this popular beach was covered with plastic debris flushed out of inland communities. During the first winter storm at Bayona Creek in Playa del Rey, our cameras documented a bizarre spectacle. Pelicans feeding amongst untold quantities of trash. Trash removal by Public Works is increasingly important. Several hundreds of tons were removed to landfills from Southern California watershed areas as a result of this single storm. Still, 30 to 50% of all debris escapes into the Pacific Ocean. All this plastic debris escaping seaward is not just unsightly trash.
Animals and humans have evolved receptors for complex chemicals called hormones, which regulate brain activity and reproduction. When a receptor is activated by its chemical key, it responds by doing a variety of things, sending a chemical signal to other cells, switching a gene on or off, or becoming more or less active. Now, since chemical contaminants in the marine environment can mimic hormones, and they are concentrated on plastic particles, we called on Dr. Michael Baker, research professor at UCSD Medical School, to learn more.
Point out the estrogen receptor binds many different ligands, and this is a problem. I mean, this is the endocrine disruptor problem. It just seems you can bind anything from something in plants to a bisphenol A. And the problem with PCBs is they're not broken down. So over a long period of time, even though it's getting a very low dosage, it accumulates and then reaches a certain level where it can then act as an endocrine disruptor. And these are two plastics, okay, bisphenol A and N-nonylphenol. Okay, so what's an estrogen? I mean, if all of these can bind to the estrogen receptor, I mean, the estrogen, usually what I think of is what we make. You know, we make in testes, we make in the ovaries, and travels to our body. Does whatever. If you were to ask me which ones I would say the plastic compounds are probably the most ubiquitous, and they will accumulate and they will move through the food chain. And I don't know where we want to look at these on these enzymes, because if they inhibit the enzymes, they will also have an endocrine effect. So we have different kinds of xenobiotics to worry about. We have the ones that are there that are going to be there for hundreds of years because they don't break down and they're slowly going to go up the food chain. Then we have others that are being pumped out all the time. I think it's the plastic issues because it's just a ubiquitous chemical for our modern, our lifestyles. Not other cultures, but our lifestyles. It sure is ubiquitous.
There's a small family of animals on this planet, and if we do not shape up, we will be excluded from the family and be told to leave, which means we will not exist. We really need to become good citizens of the planet. Estrogenic plastic that's floating in the ocean, it's in the food we eat, is Mother Nature's way of telling us you better get after a problem or she will exclude us from her family. I think it's that simple. And it's not very far away. It's only a matter of a few generations before human beings may not be able to reproduce. And plastic floating on the ocean is her gentle reminder at this time to get after the problem.
So I hope you found that educational and helpful. And, of course, one of the feelings that I have is that almost anything we do seems like a drop in a giant bucket. But, like I said, I thought it was very helpful to educate me and hopefully others as far as these other ramifications of plastics besides the old, six-pack ring around a seagull problem. So hope you feel that was worthwhile.
Yeah, I think that was very worthwhile, somewhat sobering. I think maybe we'd like to talk about that, but Mr. Carlton wants, I don't know how long it'll take. And so maybe you could go ahead and give us your report, Gary, and then we'll have our board discussion of that video.